question, you got nothing but answers. But there are not more than five, I don't care whether it's the Kentucky Derby or whatever it is, there are seldom more than five horses that really figure in any race. And if you can get it down to five, you can get 80% consistently, or 75 anyway. But you've got to be able to do, as Jeff Bunny was able to do, brutally throw off those, and Jimmy's going to go over matchups tomorrow with them, ease the burden. The greatest problem with horse players trying to evolve into handicappers is what if? Yeah, but what if? Yeah, but, ooh, but there's one. What if? And once we eliminate some of these what ifs, it is better to lose the race having thrown out a horse which statistically will only beat you once in a blue moon than it is to consistently lead the horse in for that one or two times in 100 when it will come up and beat you. Once you now Jimmy used to bet them all to get one winner. Now he has trouble getting five horses to put into the race. And that's serious. He really does. And Cochran is six is pretty high. Dr. Lerner.
I want to ask a question. I'm a novice at this time. I don't know anything about your veterans at all. What's the reason that a horse whose past performances show absolutely nothing? I mean, he's dead last most of the time, or he's sixth, seventh, eighth. He's never doing anything at all, and he wins the race against your very good pace horses. Why is that possible? How come that happens?
It happens about 7% of the time.
Yeah, but I mean, why does that happen?
Because on that particular day, he overcame whatever deficiencies were in his character. Have you ever seen a guy who was in the Marine Corps, Bob? Well, they don't have them in the Marines, but in the Army, you had guys who were perennial cowards, cheats, and thieves, and under the heat of battle, they get out in the battlefield and save the commanding officer or their sergeant who did it, and it was a noble act of heroism that would probably never be repeated. An adrenal flow, whatever it was. That happened 7% of the time. We haven't got time to figure out why it happened. We know it does happen, and we know that we're never going to win those races.
When you see that happening in a race that you handicap, that you figure you have a chance to win.
We've also found that sometimes it is not so bad as it seems. If the horse is beaten 12 lengths here, 12 lengths here, and 11 lengths here, the only problem he had was here. He was dead even here. He gained on the pace here. Sometimes those things are not total mysteries. And sometimes, you're supposing and I'm supposed, so we're really not talking about anything serious here. Here's a situation you'll find. A 21-4 pace, a 44-3, and a 108-2, and the horse is 14 lengths off, but he's still a heck of a lot better than the horse that came out of a 23-47 and a 112. And so you have to measure what did he do, what was he behind. But if you're genuinely talking about a horse that dog couldn't win,
right,
and he suddenly does. You're talking about a variety of factors which we don't attempt to handicap, because if we solved how to win the 7%, we'd lose the 70%. I'd rather win. Anything we lose in the 30% bracket, I attribute to something that we don't know anything about.
Do you take that horse after the race and try to analyze why he won that race in your life?
That is one of the most valuable exercises that you can possibly do. You know, losing a race for most handicappers, doctor, is a painful experience. You don't want to go back and look at that you lost. But it's very valuable, because the fault usually is not with the methodology or the program, but it's with the approach that you take. And very often, I know I made this discovery, and most of the discoveries I make is something that Howard told me a number of years ago, and then I discovered them. But it's okay. I at least I know them now. But very often, I've gotten beaten a lot by horses, just as you've described, who in its last two or three or four races
Some of them all no good.
Yeah, some of them all no good. You can't do anything about that. There was a horse in the first race today at Saratoga, which God knows if anyone got it, God bless them. But I'm certainly not going to bet that horse, and I'm not going to lose money betting horses that way. But very often there is some clue. There's a hidden fraction in its last race. It may not be as obvious as an early speed call. Maybe an internal fraction that it ran very quickly. It may be dropping for the first time to the level of half its maiden claiming win, for example. Very often horses like that, making that drop in class, will pick up its feet and run back to that level. But if you go back to a race, and you do it many times, I have personally, and just recently, when I made the transition from using phase 3 to wanting to really understand UltraScan, I have done a race 20 times. Over, put it into my machine 20 times
easily
until I could get the horses projected in the order in which they could come out, and sometimes they just wouldn't, and you've got to chalk that up to that 30% that Howard's talking about. But the answer to your question is yes, it's an excellent exercise, because what that will do is that if you do that often enough and your subconscious gets which pace lines will project the winners accurately, then you will by osmosis pick up which is the correct pace line. So it becomes something that is almost an intuitive thing rather than something that is just left brain and analytical.
Okay, thanks.
We have found over the years 6 point something, we'll call it 7% of the races occur, the winners come from situations maybe not as drastically bad as you've described, but from horses that we could not have figured. After we have done a post-mortem and determined that no way we could have got it, there wasn't any oversight or mistake on our part, we say, there's your 7%. Anything else? When you start losing more than 30-35%, then you got to say, where's the problem? But the 30% is the tolerance level. Yes?
Also contributing to that, let's not forget the wake-ups in the fall, the fillies do all very bad height, and there's just no explaining it, no predicting it. You just have to be very long.
And we're trying to predict. We're trying to be like baseball players. We're trying to play the averages, which we want to have an average that'll make us a living and not. Yeah, God does.
Yeah.
Even the Reverend Maine says God spoke to him and said, "You're supposed to win them all." Yeah, he says stay humble. He wants to keep you humble. Sir,
you mentioned gaining on a pace in the last is one characteristic of a hidden fraction, and I think someplace else the manuals say 1 foot faster or in any fraction is an outstanding fraction. Are there any other characteristics?
Well, the fraction, the hidden fraction is there. When a hidden fraction is significant, the significance is when it exceeds the pace of the race is your primary thing. By how much is not nearly as important as that it did it. When it's, like we say, if it exceeds it by 1 foot per second, it's really an outstanding gain. And sometimes you'll only see it in one fraction, but it's a wake-up symbol. But there's no qualifier on it, quantifier. Yes, sir?
In your first manual, you said that there's nothing worse than being beaten by a favorite that you overlook. And that's what I found so true. You find a favorite that you totally overlook, and then you find the hidden fraction.
Yeah. We have a tendency, a lot of us, to say, to start off a race by how am I going to beat the favorite? And then determined to do it. There are people who say, "Oh, I wouldn't bet a favorite. I never bet favorites." And all I know is the person who tells me, he looks me straight in the eyes and says, "I never bet favorites." I know that he's cut his win percentage down by 33% right there. Now, he's going to have to be dang good to get 66% if he's not betting the favorites. You've got to accept it. Maybe you don't have to bet them, but you have to include, you have to handicap. On the way that I do it in Las Vegas is I will find out which races have the highest odds potential by one of the morning lines separation. I won't want to play a race that's one of the horses 3-2 and the other's 2-1 or even odds or something. I look for 5-2 and 4-1. I want to play those difficult races where I get some money. But you have to always look at the favorite with an open eye, and you have to say, why is everybody making this the favorite? You want to say, why are the experts picking this? Their combined talents are not totally useless. They do help you determine what 33% of the people are going to, and what's going to win 33%. You cannot just go out to beat the favorite per se. You have to say, is the favorite logical? And if he is, he's going to pan up betting. You can make money betting even odds horses. So don't let that bother you. You've got to, if you have a philosophy that says, I won't bet favorites, then you're in trouble. Or I won't bet, if the favorite comes out number one, I'm not going to bet it. What if you have a favorite and then you also have a 9-1 horse that's your numerical second choice? You've got to look at every race as an investment proposition and not come on hidebound rules of I won't bet lower odds horse.
I thought your manual says to avoid 100-1 odds.
It says, it said to avoid betting on them. It says if you want to make optimal profits that you should get at least 2-1 odds, yeah. But you're talking money management there. What, if my advice and what you're going to do are two different things in the first place, so we have to tailor a money management program to fit your reality. If you want to play on a strict, sure, any man who's an expert odds will tell you, say, play him, take nothing less than 5-2 or something. But supposing you have a 2-1 or an even odds horse in a race with a 12-1, are you going to pass the race? A 12-1 might win. So you've got to have a condition where you can play the race, include the fact that the even odd horse has got a lot more chance of winning than your 12-1 horse, but capitalize on the opportunity of that race. And that'll be in our money management session. It doesn't. Nowhere in the manual do we ever say specifically to not to bet on any given level. We just say that for optimal money management thing, here are your options. That has to be. Nobody, I've never known a money management guy yet who anybody, they listen to him, but I've never known anybody to follow him.
The thing you got to remember, you have to take what the track gives you, and then
it's going to be weeks, days,
you know. It can go a long time without really giving you anything too hot, and all of a sudden, bang, she'll come through for you.
As Howard said, don't look for long shots when the favorites are winning.
You can't force it.
I've got some associates who are money management experts, and these are bright people, too. James Quinn is a bright guy, but he'll lose 17 races in a row, but he's a good enough handicapper that when he gets the 18th, he's recouped. But he'll say, I got three horses that all look pretty good. One's at 12-1, one's at 3-2, and one's at 2-1. I'm going to play the 12-1. Well, Bob Purdy did that with Michael Mazzola for 4 weeks. 2 weeks they did it at the fairgrounds in New Orleans where everybody is a little bit...
The Huey Long School of Handicapping.
Yeah, everybody's a little bit
deficient.
And they won thousands. Now they go to Santa Anita. They only play their high odds choice 33 races. Their low odds choice wins 27 of them. Their high odds wins one. They win one out of 33 races. They could have won 29 out of them because they insisted on playing nothing but the high odds horse. This is ridiculous. And money management experts, you ever notice they say in the long run? If you follow a mathematician's formulas for the long run, you ain't going to be there in the long run.
What Howard didn't tell you, we were also playing one of Michael's real genius things called the Dew Column.
Oh, no.
And when the set up to be about $6,000, even I was shaking.
Take what it gives you. If you bet 60-40, you bet an even odds horse and make 2 units. And there are times that aqueduct especially.
Very often, you know, it's so easy to get snowed, especially at, we New Yorkers, and I can speak because I'm native, but we New Yorkers think we're special cases in everything. and... Well, I didn't say we weren't. I said we think that we are. Of course we are. But it's not a very profitable point of view when it comes to handicapping, because you can get... Now, you're keeping your models, you know that you have your percentages and all, and yet there you are, your number 1111 horse, and you look up there, Boyish Charm the other day was 3-5 or 2-5, and you look at your second horse, Waikiki Star, if you will, and he's, you know, 7-1, and you think, now, am I going to bet into this situation because everyone knows this horse is great, even my numbers know he's great, and you lay off the race and the second horse comes romping home at a delightful price. So, on one level, being too smart and being too analytical can really hurt you. Just one thing suggests you just close your eyes, and if you have your percentages, you're going to win. You're just going to win. Just play them and not worry about it.
Well, before in Las Vegas, before they started televising, you know what the odds were. Darren Watton and I used to play all of our horses in the morning before the races and go away and come back and collect at night. Sometimes we would have lost money on it, or did lose money on the race. But then in the next race, we thought we were going to get $6, we got 12 in the long run average. But we'll get into the money management on Sunday. If you didn't have such a great accent, I wouldn't let you ask all these questions.
I was going to ask a question about money management. It's a bit depressing, you know. No, it's wonderful.
What?
If you have a horse way off 2-1 and your second choice or your other choice is at 4-1 and you've done the 60-40 and the 41 horse comes in, then you're just coming off with effectively an even money payout.
Talk when you've got like 20 race cycles. Not a race. This is the most destructive thing in anything. This applies to pace line selection, to variant making, to money management. Judging from one race can kill you, can absolutely kill you, because then you'll decide, as I had the bright idea of only betting horses which were either my first or second choice and were over 9-2. As Howard, it was disastrous. It was disastrous because I was in a very in a cycle where a lot of those horses were winning. So what Howard's presenting here is something that has been tested over thousands and thousands of races. And if you look at any one position, yes, initially I hate it. I hate it when my long odds horse comes in and I've got maybe a lesser bet on it that I threw away on that 2-5 shot. Yes, but look at long term, boy, that's where the profit is. So you've got to raise your vision out of that, because it's exactly that kind of mental up and down that will psychologically hurt you as a horse player.
Darrell Martin, you say sure better than losing. That's right. I was guilty of this myself. I always try to be the favorite, because all of us put a lot of work into handicapping. You think you want to get real value for your money when you go to the windows. That's the whole concept, is profit, the profit-oriented in this business. And I killed myself a lot by betting my second choice. Believe me, I learned my lesson. Let me tell you the way I've gotten around it. Very, very simple. If any of you have a place program where you can figure from the tote board what the horse is going to pay to place, this is how I've solved that problem for myself. If I handicap this race and I really like this top horse, along with the public, and he's 3-5, he's going to pay 340 or whatever, I'll check the place price. And if I'm going to get $3 or even $280, I'll just go into my pockets and really get down deep, and I'll make a huge place bet.
Which will knock it down to 2.
Well, the point is this. If he's going to pay $340 to win and you really like this horse along with everybody else, there isn't any real value in that win bet, because he might not win. But what are the odds that he might not place? It'd have to be something pretty serious. And that keeps me from getting into trouble betting the wrong horse.
You had a race here the other day at Belmont. I don't remember what day it was, with Teriyaki Stakes.
A couple of Wednesdays ago.
A standout horse. I bet him heavy in Vegas. Because there wasn't anybody could touch him, and if you bet against that horse, you'd have lost a lot of money. You could bet every horse in the race wouldn't have won, except betting on Teriyaki Stakes. So you got to take what you can get.
That was a 380 horse. The very next race was won by a horse, Syntonic, which was the absolute top number in that race and paid $5,780. So you get what you get. The double was $198 that day.
The other thing is that you find in New York, the place better on a lost horse.
You show me a very sophisticated horse group, which New York is supposed to be, and you find, and to the extent some of our better tracks, the more so here than any place else, the more sophisticated, the more win-oriented the population is. When you live in the jungle, New York or Los Angeles, you do get that avaricious win orientation. The great opportunities and places show.
Howard talks about the function of Hill River, and you know, it's really true. Have you ever seen where the horse plays more to play than he does to win?
Yeah.
Okay.
Short
and what do the people around you say? It's fixed. It can't happen.
All right, folks, we're going to have to cut this up. Some people are getting ready to go to bed.
One last thing on the variance. If you also keep variance separate from fast and off track the way you originally
did. That is the variance. That is your variance. If you keep them on a daily basis, just to what we talked about every morning with a cup of coffee, it only takes that long. You're only playing one track, even two tracks. Well, I did it. We have classes in Beaumont, and I did it one day talking from the Los Angeles Times results series, talking. I had them clock me. Lecturing and smoking a pipe and mumbling. It took 3 minutes and 12 seconds per day. 3 minutes and 12 seconds, you can then you keep the day what it was, you go back, and that was a sloppy day, you know the difference between a horse coming off that track and anything. That's the ideal way to keep it. But tomorrow we'll show you what amazing corollary is between keeping it on a daily basis and making a meridian variant. We'll give you exactly the same horse. Now before we, I want to just give you a synopsis of what's coming tomorrow. Tomorrow, all these fellows will be up here. There will be a moderator at each panel. The panels are listed in the manual. They start on page 6. We're going to start up with the 10 steps, and the 10 steps are on page 5. We're going to start off with classifying the contenders right from the very beginning, the conditions of the race, conditions of eligibility, looking at form cycling, looking at class, and we're going to go into baseline selection. We're going to have a lot of sample races out of your green manual. How Jimmy reduces the contenders to 5 and everybody else now doing it likewise. How to make adjustments, taking you step by step, when to make adjustments, showing you how a meridian adjustment is just as effective as the long range adjustments, unless your particular psyche demands you make these daily. A lot of people want them. They wouldn't give up their variance if you gave them the winner on a silver platter. They want to keep those variants. If that's part of your psychological nature, then you should do it. But how you can do it down a dirty, easy way. And someone wanted to talk about their computers, the various differences in some of the computers and the differ from what it says in the manual and why that's not such a great difference. So any clarification you need on your specific program, we fortunately have captured the one controversial programmer, Mr. Purdy here with us, your IBM and its alleged computer. What to do about it. Then the interpretation of the readouts. Making a model, a Brohammer model, which is an absolute marvelous way to really pinpoint what's going to win. From your track profile, which Mr. Schmidt would moderate that one, and then the record keeping. Those steps, and that brief page there, are the steps that we take to win races with consistency. And each one of these gentlemen will then be moderating a panel of everybody on that subject. And so what I would like you to do is to kind of see what those steps are and how they'll be handled tomorrow. So when we're on variance,
you won't be asking money men. Tonight is fine to be open and talk about anything, but tomorrow let's be generic to each subject as we take it, so that each subject is exhausted to the degree of time we can offer it before we go on to the next one, so that there are no questions. And if possible, let's listen very carefully to each question that is asked tomorrow. Phrase your questions as succinctly as possible, and when the answers come, we've had the problem in the past that somebody will mumble or not talk up, or somebody in the front usually asks questions that can't be heard in the back. If every question, we would try to repeat it from up here, so that when it's answered, it won't be then asked three or four more times because somebody didn't hear the question. So kind of look over those 10 before you go to bed, and look over the schedule we have tomorrow, and take them step by step, and have your questions. Use some of these blank pages, say notes, and write out your questions. And don't be afraid to ask any question there. There are no stupid questions, only stupid answers. Somebody said that. I've heard a lot of stupid questions, but we say that. We say that. Anyhow, thank you very much, and we'll see you right now.
This is the end of the tape.